Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Cosmo Happy Hour. It's everything you would talk about with your best friends, from sex to celebrity to entertainment.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
Hi guys, it's time for another Cosmopolitan.com happy hour, the happiest hour of the week or something like that. This week we are talking about women and self-promotion. Subtitle, should we all be narcissists? I love narcissism. I'm just going to come right out of the gate and say that. That's why I wanted to do this topic. But I'm here with Amy Odell, the editor of Cosmopolitan.com, Patty Greco, who is our entertainment director and works with celebrities who are expert promoters, there we go, expert self-promoters all the time. And Karina, I just realized I don't know how to say your last name.
It's Shay.
Shay. Shay. Okay, Karina Shay. Sorry about that.
My mind was just blown.
My mind was blown too. Karina Shay, who just graduated from college, so she's representing the super millennial set, just graduated and joined the Cosmo team. And is also a sort of former budding Instagram star herself. So we're going to talk about that a little later. But I wanted to dive right into talking. One of the reasons this topic was on my mind was because, Amy, you just wrote an op-ed for Business of Fashion where you were sort of talking about this idea of the Instagram stars, which is this very, you know, new sort of in the last 5 years idea that people are making their entire careers based on the pictures they post to Instagram. I thought your essay was really interesting because you talked about sort of feeling a little eye-rolly about this in the past and right. Sort of feeling differently about that now and sort of feeling a little more like, okay, props to these girls. Can you talk a little bit about how your opinion of that changed?
Right. So I wrote this op-ed for Business of Fashion, pegged to Fashion Week, which just wrapped up in New York, which we talked about on our inaugural podcast last week, which was exciting. But, I think that this phenomenon of the internet celebrity is still pretty new, even though it kind of is starting to feel old because that kind of thing gets to feel old really quickly. People haven't been stars just because of their internet presence for a very long time. And when they burst onto the fashion scene, I think there was a lot of eye rolling because it was just like, you're just here to get your picture taken and that's it. And that's gross.
Right. Opposed to people like you who are there working as journalists or a traditional fashion editor who has worked her way up to sort of be at those shows. Now you have people bursting on that are saying like, I'm just here to get my picture taken.
Right, exactly. Because in the fashion world anyway, the way that it works historically, it doesn't work this way anymore, but you would have to toil working in fashion closets, packing trunks, steaming clothes. Karina, you're a former fashion intern and you did like a fraction of what I think, you know, you would do maybe at a print magazine or like in the 90s before the internet was really a thing, but you used to have to really toil to work your way up in the fashion industry, and that's not the case anymore, or at least it doesn't seem that way. It sort of seems like people decide, I'm going to be an Instagram fashion star, and I'm going to start this feed, and I'm going to wear all my fancy clothes, and then I'm going to be famous, and people have a visceral reaction to that. And I talked in the piece about, you know, why is that? Because I used to be that person, and part of the reason that is, which I think is so interesting, is just the way we perceive women in society, and society reacts negatively to women who self-promote. Mm-hmm. Studies show this. It's really quite fascinating. I think that, like, for me personally, my feelings on self-promotion just working as an internet editor for so long have changed, because I feel like the internet is a place where anyone can kind of be a star and anyone can kind of be their own brand. And at least my career advice to online editors is, you know, it's great for you to go into your job interviews having some kind of social media presence, because that's something that I look for when young women come in interviewing for editorial jobs at Cosmo.
And you talk in your piece, one thing that I think is particularly particularly interesting is you really do talk about it, even if you're not an Instagram star, even if you're working a more traditional job, that these things can be an asset. Like you say, that can make you a more valuable employee or more valuable to your boss if you can bring 100,000 Instagram followers to the table. And so, you know, you're talking about hiring. You hire all the time at cosmopolitan.com. Is that, you know, how do you feel about that? Like if someone comes in and they have no social footprint, is that a deal breaker to you?
It's a deal breaker to me if the person is fresh out of college. I feel like, you know, when I started my career, social media was not a fact. It was a thing that was new, and we were sort of like, should we do this? And I remember, I don't know, Patty, like, if you remember when you joined Twitter. Like, I remember joining Twitter, and I was like, should I do this? Like, I don't know. Is it gross to be on Twitter? And now it's like, who cares? Everyone has to be on Twitter if you're a journalist, because that's where the news media just is. But I feel like, you know, if you came up in college with social media being so influential on media, like, you better get it.
Right.
Because it's so crucial to at least what we do on Cosmo.
Right. I do kind of always, like, make this joke that it's a bit like, if you don't have a social media presence at this day and age, at least some kind of presence, it's almost like being the person in the yearbook where it's, like, not pictured. And, you know, there's always, like, two class weirdos that, like, never submit their photo to the yearbook. And it's sort of like, you know, just you're not part of the conversation. Like, you aren't part of the sort of collective memory of this experience if you're not broadcasting things. But so, Patty, this is the point where I want to flip to you, because you probably feel completely differently than I do as a self-described narcissist.
No, it's not that I feel... Okay, first of all, this isn't like one of these people who are like, I don't watch television. Like, I don't want to come off as a snob about people who self-promote.
Right.
I think it's fine if you do, but I also think it's fine if I don't. And it's interesting that you brought up your book, because a lot of this whole conversation even just brings up kind of like high school anxiety for me, because the reason why I'm so repulsed by the whole thing is because it feels like we're recreating high school now.
Right.
And then there are certain people who you're like, yeah, you seem cool on social media, but I know you're stupid. I know you peaked on social media right now. And then it's like, and I feel like maybe this is my own narcissism, is that I feel like I'm so fucking cool that you're gonna have to know me to get my coolness, okay? I'm not giving it to you for, like, maybe I'm the ultimate narcissist here, because I feel like I'm too good for the mask.
You're so cool. It cannot be captured in Instagram.
But see, here we go to high school again, because clearly I'm like, I'm defending myself so much. I think there's a lot of like mental angst going on with the whole thing for me. And then in terms of getting hired, I mean, Amy hired me and I had no social media presence when she hired me. I'm always coming in last in our rankings of who has the most Twitter followers and who tweeted the most. We do this at Cosmo, is rank the staff based on their tweets and whatnot and other stuff.
Because I want you guys to tweet and be Twitter stars.
Right. And I really appreciate that. But you did hire me despite my lack of a presence, and that's probably because of the role I play. I do think writers, I'm more of an editor than a writer, and I think writers do need to have a social presence. But I will warn people, you can assign something to somebody who is hilarious and funny and charming on Twitter, and they can not file on time, and they can be terrible long-form writers, they could be shallow thinkers. It doesn't guarantee that they're going to be great at what they do.
Sure. And I think that's very true. It's always, you know, there's always this, you know, we all know that social media is fake, but I think that's especially true when you're thinking about writers, like someone you would actually hire to do a job for you just because they can write a funny, like 140 character thing that was retweeted 115 times doesn't necessarily mean that they have the same skill set that somebody who spent years not tweeting but knows how to write a story, you know, you can't really compare those two things.
Right. And it's like, even look at like Rob Delaney was a Twitter star. His brand of humor on Twitter is completely different than his brand of humor on his show Catastrophe, which I'm obsessed with, everyone.
Right.
My point being that it's sort of like the fake version of you.
Right.
It doesn't mean that when you get hired to do something different, you're going to actually bring that version of you to the table.
Sure. We've talked about this before. He's my favorite person to follow on Twitter. I think he's so funny. I'm obsessed with him. I love how he has all these different like wacky personas. He's a genius. But one thing that we've sort of talked about before is this idea of like, how important is it to have a following And like, you can buy followers. I've never actually done this, but supposedly on like Amazon.com, I could buy like 10,000 bots to follow me on Twitter. And I know Amy and I have talked about this because Amy just wrote her first book, Tales from the Back Row. And, you know, you've sort of talked about the idea of it is important when you're landing book deals and things like this. People do look at your social following. I think if I ever wanted to write a book, which I don't, I think I would just go to Amazon and buy the 10,000 bots. And like, I think there's a feeling like, oh, that's like, you shouldn't do that. That's cheating. And it's like, well, if you can buy that for $50 and it's going to help you get a book deal, isn't it kind of stupid not to do that? Isn't it akin to like my mom always telling me when you're running for student body president, like you vote for yourself? You know that thing that you have to be told, like, don't vote for your friend. Don't feel bad about voting for yourself. I feel like buying Twitter followers is voting for yourself. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I totally get your theory about doing that in order to get the deal. But then the problem is when you need to sell the books and they're all fake.
And I should also say I haven't actually done it. I'm sort of like I'm taking this argument and pretending like the only thing that matters is buying Twitter followers. Maybe I should do it right now.
The other problem is when you have to go to sleep at night and you have to think about who the fuck you are.
Well, for you, I honestly wouldn't care. I don't know. It's funny because like selling a book, not to like only talk about my book, but like I've never had to sell anything to anybody before, and it's so hard.
Right.
It's really, really hard. And like I've been telling people, writing a book is the hardest thing I've ever done because authors inevitably get so involved in their own promotion. Because I'm not a celebrity. I'm not, you know, a movie star. It's not. I'm not Mindy Kaling. Like Mindy Kaling's book comes out this week and it's number 3 in the Amazon store.
Right.
Like for me, if I can be in the top 10,000, I'm in a really good place. And even that is really hard to do. But I mean, selling, it's really hard when you have something to promote. And it's like, I sort of, not that I feel bad for actresses, but like, I sort of sympathize with them, like having to go on like talk shows and talk about their projects and like all of the dumb things that they have to do to promote, like get you to see a movie. Like, it's hard to get people to pay money to see something that you created.
Sure. And like, you know, that's actually a really good point with, you know, talking about actresses, like that whole idea of like when they're doing those press rounds and they're saying the same soundbite to a million different outlets over and over and over again, that's because that makes them more valuable if their movie opens at number one or exceeds expectations. You know, if you're a bankable actress, that's going to help you get future roles. I think, Patty, I don't know, you're the expert on the entertainment industry.
Yeah, well, I think that this is where social media for them comes in more in handy, because I think that the reason that system is flawed, the junket system where you're hearing them say the same sound bites over and over again, is because it's so far from authenticity, which is what consumers crave from their celebrities and what social media allows them to possibly present the public with, is that authenticity. So yeah, I feel for them. They have to do this stuff, but I don't know that they're necessarily doing it right or that junkets are the right way to do them, because after a while, fans know that they're repeating the same thing over and over again.
I think it's impossible to have a conversation about self-promotion and not talk about that idea of authenticity, because it's, we know everything we put out on social media is fake, but at the same time, like, it has to feel real or like be a believable lie. I don't know, Karina, I feel like this is a good time to throw to you, and you should talk a little bit about, before we forced you to come work at Cosmo for us and be a brilliant social genius, you know, when you were a student at FIT, you were maintaining a blog and an Instagram account. Talk a little bit about how that came about and how you had to hustle to sort of promote that.
Yeah, so basically when I was a freshman at FIT, I felt really basic, and all things for me, I guess, stem from insecurity, which is fine. But
the root of all self-promotion, insecurity.
That is true.
Like, yeah, real talk, though. And I noticed that a lot of, like, the really avant-garde looking girls all had blogs, and they would, like, never pay for their clothes. They would just have shit sent to them. And I guess I just, like, wanted to be thought of at the same level as all of them. So
wait, is that really true that you can be an FIT student and then just, like, find a way to get people to send you clothes?
If you have, like, a blog, which, like, every FIT student has a blog.
And does it have to be, like, good? Or
no. I got a lot of free clothes, and like, I don't think mine was good.
Like, what kind of stuff did you get?
I got a lot of, like, mainstream stuff, which I was fine with.
What does that mean, though?
Like, mainstream mall brands. Stuff?
Like, they'll send you jeans.
Yeah.
They'll send you, like, here's
like Aeropostale.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
Which actually makes so much sense for brands, because, again, brands want to feel authentic. And mm-hmm. So what is more authentic than having, like, a cool girl who lives in New York City and goes to FIT who's, like, talking about her clothes in a really fun, chatty way? Like, that feels like you're getting it into the hands of people that are cool that you want wearing your clothes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think it's so smart for the, I think that's so smart for the brands to do it. But, like, I think, like, Karina, I wanted to bring you on to this episode because I knew you would be honest. I mean, I think that's the draw for a lot of people that start off doing this. Like, how can you resist that? Like, I want people to send me free stuff. I want free makeup. I want free handbags. I want to get flown around the world to do X, Y, and Z things.
Yeah, and it's like being, like, your own little, like, internet celebrity. Like, all my friends who are popular on Instagram, like, I don't know, it was just, it was like they were celebrities. Like, they would get flown places, they would get stuff sent to them all the time that was like higher quality or just like more stuff, or like they would make a ton of like pocket money doing that. And I started my blog like basically wanting that, and it was cool, it was fun, it was an experience. I got to go to Fashion Week, which like I feel really bad for, I guess, now, because I don't think, like, looking back, I deserve to be there. I don't think I deserve to even be in, like, the standing row, because, like, it was all about, like, the Instagram and, like, letting people know that I was there. And it's, like, I didn't ever take notes about the shows. And it was just, like, I feel like a lot of lower-tier bloggers don't need to be there.
That's interesting. You feel like you sort of, like, cheated the system in a way.
Yeah.
And probably, like, now working at Cosmopolitan.com and you've worked your way up in the fashion industry and you have this job now, like, you probably sort of see, like, you know, Charles Manning, our style editor at Cosmo, like, how he's been, like, busting his ass for a decade or whatever. And it's sort of, like, that feels very different than, like, oh, I have this Instagram account.
Yeah. And, no, and it's just, like, again, the whole thing with, like, buying followers, it's, like, there's, like, always, like, rumor mills, like, oh, so-and-so bought her followers, and
right.
It's just, like, I think ultimately for me, it was just, and I guess going back to, like, your thing that you were talking about where everyone, like, lives their best life on social media, and it is, to an extent, fake, it just gets hard to upkeep that if that's not, like, really who you are, or, like,
sure.
If you, like, don't want to be aspirational 24/7, like, it's just going to be difficult to, like, keep up, so.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson. Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. You're listening to the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
You guys, when I was 15, I started an online magazine. I was 15 a million years ago, but I started an online magazine that was sent out to people on AOL through email. It was called Pizzazz. But this was a big thing that girls would start these, like, little online magazines and email them around. And, like, I would go to the 17.com message boards and be like, if anyone wants to subscribe to my... Basically, what I'm saying is I invented the email newsletter. But I remember... So this was a popular thing that a lot of people were doing on the internet in 2000... Or, like, 99 or whatever it was. Would have been 90, whatever, it doesn't matter. I won't age myself. But the point is, there were these other girls, they were twins in Florida, and they ran an email newsletter that was one of the ones that had like a bazillion subscribers called Girl Talk. And they had a P.O. box. You could contact them at their P.O. box. And I was like, that means you've made it. Like, if you have a P.O. box. So I feel like that was my first taste of like, and you know, this was pre-Instagram, pre-everything social media, like AOL, You've Got Mail days. And it was like, oh, like there's an advantage to sort of putting yourself out there and promoting yourself. And like, I remember a thing which I sort of feel proud of in a weird way looking back, but what we would do with our little email newsletter is I would like reach out to, you know, Steve Madden, for instance, and I was like, I run this email newsletter with 3,000 subscribers, like, would you give a free pair of shoes so we can do a contest? And they were sort of like, okay. And then I was just like, wow, this is so cool, like Steve Madden is giving me a pair of shoes that I can mail to someone.
I feel like I know so much more about you now, and that this is your destiny.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like, it's so weird because I basically always wanted to do what I was doing now. So for me, like, the early foray into it, I feel like really was career building. And like, you know, it sounds so stupid, but really did like launch my career even back before the time of really having like internet stars, because I had my little online magazine and I would write to Cosmo Girl and say like, oh, like, do you need any like cool teens to do like X, Y, and Z? And like, that sort of helped me like go down the road of internships and stuff like that. Anyway, like, I'm telling this long, boring story about myself because this is an episode about self-promotion. Listen how cool 15-year-old Alisa was. So switching the topic a little bit, I want to ask you guys if you, like, have a favorite moment in your recollection, like, pop culture, real world ever, like, a favorite self-promotion moment. And I'm going to start because I have two examples. So one, I'm obsessed with Kim Kardashian, but I'm specifically obsessed with the Selfish book. I just love the idea of like having the balls to be like, I'm going to publish this like high-end beautiful art book of all my selfies. I feel like that is the dream. That is the self-promotion dream. My other one is the Silento Watch Me song. Like, I don't know why, but I was at a wedding this weekend and we just like couldn't stop getting ready to that song because we're like old people. So it's like months after it came out. Now we're obsessed with it. But I just love how it starts off and he says, you already know who it is. Like, isn't that the best? I'm going to start answering my phone that way. I'm just going to say, you already know who it is. So do you guys have a favorite? That's kind of what I think about. Like, that's where we're at in 2015, publishing your selfies from your phone and just starting your song and saying, you already know who it is.
I like that song, that selfie song. Well, I don't like it, but yeah. I think it's just, like, ridiculous and it's so emblematic of the time that we live in.
Yes.
I think they played it at my wedding last year and I was upset about it.
But now you would be like, that's everything.
No.
No.
I don't know. Maybe if I had like 5 martinis, I would get up and dance to it.
Sure. And the whole thing of that song was to promote it. They took these real selfies that people had submitted to be part of the video, which I think is genius. You know, you're incorporating sort of this like user generated moment into the video and then all the people featured in it, of course, are going to share it. So, yeah, I think that's like, you know, we wouldn't have been able to do that in the same way a few years ago. And it feels like a very 2015.
I thought it was brilliant.
So brilliant, and a commentary on like the selfie culture. I love selfies.
And also a commentary on how bitchy we all are.
Yeah.
And judgmental of other people, which goes back to my earlier point about like how we look down on women who self-promote. Like the lyrics in that song are like, ew, can you believe what she's wearing? Stuff like that.
Right, right.
Which is just so real. Like, Elisa, you and I had to go to the Harper's Bazaar Icons party, which was the Fashion Week party. The other night, and it was like with the Hadid sisters and Corinne Reutfeldt and I don't know, Mariah Carey, Katy Perry. And everywhere I looked, someone was taking a selfie or doing something on their phone, and I was just like rolling my eyes.
Right.
But it's not like we were any different.
Right, right. Of course, of course. We were like 100% part of the problem. And I do think that's there's that feeling like you get to go to this cool party, but like it's not real if you can't capture it. I am obsessed with Taylor Swift, and I went to her concert over the weekend, and I made a rookie mistake, which is that I showed up and realized to my horror that my battery was on 18%. Like, can you even?
Scary.
So it forced me to actually watch Taylor Swift. I took like 5 photos before my phone died, and that was it. But like, you know, it was so fun. It was like the best night of my life. But I felt like there was something very real about that. Like, oh, I'm actually here to enjoy this. I'm not just going to record the whole thing and have this like piece of crap video.
Wait, didn't that make it better for you?
It did make it better. But like, I also have to say, I have so much joy out of like the 2 pictures I was able to post to Instagram.
Right. So maybe it's like, 2 is the limit that you should put on yourself when you're right. at a show. Take right. 2 photos and then like actually live it.
Right. And then like put your phone away. But I don't know. I work in social media, so I'm a bit of a defender of this. I do think that is part of, like, if I was really going to defend it and go hard on the defense, I would say that capturing these moments as they're happening is part of how we experience them. And like being at that party and being able to snap, you know, like, it was fun to try to snap those photos of Bella and of, you know, Kate Upton. Like, it was fun to try to do that. Like, it felt like part of the experience. No comments.
No, I think it is part of the experience. I just think it's like there could be a limitation on it. And you're acting like you're the type to spam people with everything that you do, but you're actually so good at social media because I don't feel like you're aggressively attacking me with your 1 billion Taylor Swift photos. It was the one photo, and then I was like,
aggressively attacked.
And then it's like I need to ask Elisa IRL about this Taylor Swift show.
Sure. And there is like, we should speak to this sort of part of it of like the shyness about, oh, actually, on the note of shyness, at the Taylor Swift concert, I thought it was so interesting, and people much smarter than me have written about this, but the first thing she says in the 1989 World Tour when she comes out is, hi, I'm Taylor. Like, it's this very sort of like, you know, like, wouldn't it be great if she, you already know who it is. But, you know, I think there's something sort of very stereotypically feminine about this sort of understated. I mean, this is her world tour. She's done, how many headlining world tours has she done? A handful.
We need Eliza.
Exactly. But Eliza, our other entertainment editor. But, you know, she's done a handful of these. Like, she doesn't need to come out and sort of, hi, I'm Taylor. But that's very much part of her persona. And I think very representative of that box women get put into of even when you are a global phenomenon and a headlining world tour, this feeling of still needing to come out there and play the part a little.
I read that more as she's trying to create a sense of intimacy.
Sure.
And we're all friends hanging out here. Because then throughout the rest of the show, she constantly has these interludes where she's talking about wanting to know you and wanting you to feel good. And
absolutely. So sort of like a one-to-one connection, even though she's playing to stadiums.
Also, it's not just it doesn't have to just be a male-female thing, because she's clearly ripping off Johnny Cash.
Right. Hello. Oh.
Johnny Cash.
Oh, good one. Okay. Well, I think I was kind of thinking coming into this about
talk about a Flashback Friday.
Exactly, Flashback Friday.
I'm old.
But I was thinking about other examples of artists, and the only other one I could think of was actually Jason Derulo, who does not do it anymore, but he used to start every song with a like auto-tune of his name. But then, oh, this is the other example, is like Britney, like that I'm Britney bitch, which I love, but was not early Britney. That's more like 2013.
That feels different
onward
to me than Hi, I'm Taylor.
Right. But just thinking in general about, I think it's all different, and if we had hours and hours and hours, we could pick this apart. But just sort of the way the artists present themselves and like taking ownership of your art, and how much of Jason Derulo releasing a song, how much is that about creating this great radio friendly hit that's gonna like get people moving into club, and how much of it is about saying like, I need to specifically tie this to me and to like my brand. Does that make sense?
I had a friend, actually, who I remember I was, like, helping her study for her art history exam, or, like, she was helping me or something. And I guess there's, like, I'm, like, totally going to butcher this reference because I don't really know what I'm talking about.
Sure, sure.
But it was, like, I guess, like, I want to say, like, Dutch paintings or something. Like, sometimes, like, the artist paints themselves painting the painting.
Right.
And she said that it was, like, Jason Derulo singing his name at the beginning of every song. And I, like, always remembered that. And I feel like it's, like, just really funny, like, the translation between that. Like,
well, sure. And just the idea that, like, in some ways, self-promotion is, like, you know, old as humanity itself.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. To be alive is to promote yourself, I guess.
Well, it is now.
Right, right, right.
More so than ever.
I think one thing I also kind of wanted to touch on is the idea of, like, the sort of changing idea of, like, self-promotion. And, like, people much smarter than me have also written about this, but I'm going to use Mindy Kaling as an example. And sort of the idea of, like, her specific brand of humor is sort of to be very obsessed with herself, at the same time being very open about sort of, like, you know, being a hot mess. And I think that's a very modern sort of take on self-promotion that I think a lot of the funny women, Tina Fey and Mindy Kaling, that we all love, this sort of idea of being simultaneously obsessed with yourself but also being really open about being a dumpster. Do you guys sort of see that as being being different from the way people maybe a decade ago were talking about themselves?
Well, I think it's like it's interesting, that whole I'm a dumpster thing, or I'm a mess. I don't think Mindy Kaling's a mess. I don't think Amy Schumer's
sure.
a mess. I think if you're really a mess, you're sort of like so crippled by how much of a mess you are, you can't actually tweet about it. So
right.
I think that goes back to, there's maybe a nugget of truth in there.
Right.
But that's like the version of yourself you want to put out there. To answer your question, whether or not it's changed, I don't actually know.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I do think that that's a trend now, but I don't know. I think it's just because now we have Twitter to hear everybody's stories about how they put their shirt on inside out today.
Right, right. Well, it actually happens all the time on Twitter. Like, it's like people love to tweet about, like, oops, I dumped coffee on myself. Like, like, I'm such a hot mess. Like, there's sort of, like, a weird, like, I think that's just a weird evolution. Like, when did it become that you, like, brag about that?
I think that women in particular probably feel pressure to be self-deprecating because, again, it's like society penalizes women for bragging about their accomplishments.
Right.
Like, for every woman in a position of power who is self-promoting, she has a lot of haters. And it's not the same for men.
Right. So for women, you have to walk that line between, you know, I think I was even thinking about that when I was tweeting about the first episode of our podcast, which was last week, and that we're all super excited about and want to be successful. But I tweeted out like, oh, I'm hosting a podcast. Like, now you can listen to my Valley Girl, like, slang, like, all day long. You know, there was this feeling of like, I can't just be like, listen to this amazing thing I'm doing. You know, you have to like take yourself down a notch.
But that's in part because you know what people respond to. Right. And so it's not just what I'm tweeting it this way for this reason because of something inside of me. It's because you know what social media audiences respond to, and they respond more to that than if you were just like, hey, listen to my podcast. What's the hook? What's the personality?
Right. So it's sort of a combination of like feeling like a woman and maybe being a little shy about it, but also knowing it's very trendy to throw in that self. Oh my God, the layers of self-promotion. We can't escape it.
I mean, like, when I was writing my book, it's a self-deprecating book, and if you look at the Amazon reviews, not that I'm reading them anymore, because, you, like,
that
God, no.
Yeah.
But, like, some of the headlines of the reviews are, like, funny and self-deprecating. It, like, people are praising it for being self-deprecating, and that is something that I've had called out a lot about it, and, you know, I was really careful to do that and to do it a lot because... Who wants to hear, like, I'm fabulous, I went to a fashion show and I talked to celebrities, which is what the book is about.
Right.
Like, I would have been annoyed with that person if it wasn't done in the right way, which is not, I'm not saying that's fair. It's just, like, how we are.
Right.
And, like, I'm fascinated about why that is.
Why we want to be self-deprecating?
No, why we don't want women to just be like, I'm great.
Right, like you would rather, I mean, like, I guess in some ways for the masses, it's, you know, more relatable, the idea of feeling a bit like a fish out of water. Like, I even say, you know, like, going back to the whole high school thing, like, does anyone really feel like the popular girl? Like, did the most popular girl in high school really feel like the most popular girl in high school? I think everyone sort of feels like a fish out of water, and I think that is what made your book relatable, is that you, I mean, literally the title, Tales from the Back Row, you're talking about this very exclusive and glamorous industry, but from the perspective of someone that didn't feel like she belonged. And
right.
I think people relate to that.
Right. Well, I hope so.
Amy, what was sort of like, were you given specific do's and don'ts in terms of like, you know, you've been working on this book for years, you knew it was coming out September 1st. Were you given specific do's and don'ts about like, this is how you promote yourself?
No, not at all, actually. I have gone through media training, just being in the position that I am at Cosmo, and then in previous jobs, I've had media training, like, I think the past, including this job, like the past three jobs I've had some kind of media training. And I don't know. I can't say that, like, you really, the best thing about media training, I guess, is, and it's really like for going on TV, because going on TV is actually a lot harder than it looks. At least it is for me. But the best thing about it is that it forces you to watch yourself and say, oh, I have this weird nervous tic that is distracting from what I'm saying. But no, like, no one sat me down and was like, this is how you sell your book.
Right.
So, and I don't even know. I was so busy, like, trying to finish it and get it out and promote it that I don't even know that I really thought that hard about, like, what is the most selling way to get this book out there. I think, you know, every book has blurbs on it, which are, like, quotes from usually other authors on the back of a book. And we thought we could think harder about those because we had more time. I don't know. When I was talking to the publicist from my publisher, Simon & Schuster, the other day, and she was like, I did a radio interview, and she was like, I thought it was great. It was really selling. And I was like, well, okay, great. I just went and talked, but I didn't really think about it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine, like, when an actress is going out, because I'm a nobody, but if Jennifer Lawrence is going out and promoting a movie, I mean, do you think she's sitting down and saying, like, this is what I'm going to say? I mean, probably.
Oh, yeah. I think that her publicist probably knows X, Y, and Z types of questions are going to be asked, and they talk through the answers. And then sometimes you'll get an actual message from a publicist where they say, don't ask about this. That's what they pay them for.
Right. And I think even just like promoting this, play up these storylines in the movie, like that it's about friendship instead of it being about...
They have their talking points.
Right. Like the controversial aspect. But, I mean, not with Jennifer Lawrence, but just with anything in general.
But I think to go back to the original, the previous conversation we had, I think that's what makes everything so boring and watered down and it doesn't really work anymore. I don't know. No offense, publicists.
Right, right. Well, people love a wild card.
I agree with you. It's like people want authenticity, and I think that's why people are so drawn to shameless self-promoters on the internet, because the best ones, I guess it seems like they would be doing this anyway. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, that's why people love Jennifer Lawrence, because she says things that are unexpected. And it's so... Like, stars have become so canned, and I think actresses in particular, I think pop stars are different, but I feel like they become so canned that it's just like, if Jennifer Lawrence is on the red carpet and is like, God, I'm so hungry. I just want a Philly cheesesteak right now, or whatever she said at the Oscars that one time. Like, that's such a huge moment because everyone is so composed and so canned that, like, no one ever says anything real.
Yeah, but then it turned around on her. And to be clear, we all love Jennifer Lawrence, but it turned around on her where the second time she fell, I think it was the second time on a red carpet, the internet actually wondered, is she fake falling? Is she now faking her authenticity? And that's such a mind fuck to have to wonder, is now my authenticity so authentic that people think it's inauthentic? And I do not know why people want to subject themselves to that. I don't know.
Right, right. There's a way.
So you're not going to be the next J-Law?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
But Mindy Kaling is a great example of somebody who does it very well because she's you're right, she's very self-deprecating, but there's a whole chapter in her book, her new book, about how people always ask her, how did you get so confident? And she says confidence is earned, and she explains all the work that she put into her career. And in that respect, she's like very serious. But then there's another chapter about how stars get to look the way stars look. And she's like, I sit under this face mask for this long. I have extensions. And so that's the realness that people crave, but or the messiness that people crave, I guess. But I think when it comes down to it, people who are super successful work really, really hard. And Amy, you're another example of that. You may self-promote. You may write funny tweets and Instagram things, but you also worked for years on your book. I don't know.
Right, right, right. And, like, I always say, like, we talk about this all the time, but, like, I don't even know how you ran cosmopolitan.com and also wrote a book. That sounds impossible.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm just really tired. It's kind of all I can think about right now.
I thought you were going to say I'm just really talented.
No, I can't say that because then you would all hate me.
No, I wouldn't. I like people to just be frank. I got here because I'm the shit and I'm smart.
But I also feel like you said confident, or Mindy said confidence is earned. Like, talent is in some ways also earned.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like, Elisa, you're a social media, like,
expert.
Yeah, like, expert, and, like, you're amazing at it, but it's not just, you know, like, you learned a lot along the way, yeah. as did I.
Yeah, I did not wake up like this.
Yeah, you have to want to become good at what you do. Like, I mean,
it's ironic that this is, like, a segment in part about narcissism that has also devolved into how we all like to be so self-deprecating. It's like, how is it narcissism to be like, oh my God, I just shit myself today?
Oh my God, I love it. I want to tell another story about myself because I'm such a narcissist, but, like, one time, this is, like, an inside joke with my friends that, like, one time I said, and I was being completely serious because I actually believe this, but I was like, I look good in all colors. Like, I was like, all colors are flattering on me.
Okay, even the colors in the Kanye West Yeezus show.
Yes. Especially
brown.
Especially the, like, brown monochromatic. No, probably not that. But yeah, I, like, said that in a moment of complete seriousness, and my friends called me out on it, and now it's become a joke. But I maintain that it's true.
Yeah.
This is sort of an aside, but I was dying because the other day we were talking about our coverage of the Yeezus show, where Kanye just showed all those horrible brown clothes, and you were joking about the how you were going to put it on Facebook or the headline or something, and you were like, yeah, what, I mean, what can we say? Here's a bunch of brown clothes.
Here's a bunch of brown clothes. Exactly. That is an expert in self-promotion, though, Kanye.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes everywhere in a fucking tan sweatsuit now.
But see, what I like about him is that obviously he's tweeted a lot, but he doesn't tweet regularly. He tweets in spurts. And what he does is he does things that force other people to tweet about him and other people to write about him. Isn't that?
It's brilliant.
Well, he's living the dream.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, what? I don't know.
No, it's like when you're so good at self-promotion that other people, that you no longer have to do it. Other people promote you.
That's not being good at self-promotion. That's being good at creating content.
Right, 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 right,
like
right.
Creating buzz.
It's being famous.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Being like a good famous. We have to wrap up, but Patty, Karina, I'm not letting you guys off the hook. You have to say your favorite self-promotion moment ever.
Oh, you know, I really was looking forward to being let off the hook of this. I'm going to have to steal your Kim Kardashian selfie book because I actually sat down and tried to read it and
There's words in it?
There are words in it and I wanted so much, I was just like, it was so great and so brilliant that I read it and I was just like loving looking only at pictures of her, and that's kind of weird for me.
I loved it. It was brilliant. I think it's like a moment in time. I love it. Okay, Karina.
I was going to say Jason Derulo, actually.
Yes.
When he sings his own name. I didn't know that he no longer does it, though.
I think he was sort of gave an interview about being like, you know, it's phase two. He's like, you already know who it is. Basically. Yeah, I love him. Okay, so I feel obligated to end this all by saying follow us all on Twitter. I'm at Elisa Benson.
I'm literally having to look up my Twitter handle.
Oh, my gosh. Patty. This is unacceptable.
I'm at Patty Greco. I was seeing if my middle initial was in it. I am at Patty. I'm at Patty Greco.
Patty with an I.
Patty with an I.
And Greco, G-R-E-C-O. You gotta sell this, Patty. Exactly.
I'm at Patty Greco.
By spelling it.
P-A-T-T-I-G-R-E-C-O. Follow me.
I'm at Karina, C-A-R-I-N-A, last name, H-S-I-E-H. Because you would never guess that from the way it's pronounced.
I'm at Amy Odell, A-M-Y-O-D-E-L-L.
Okay, come say hi, and we'll be so busy and important that we won't have time to ever respond. No, I'm just kidding.
I try to engage with everyone who tweets with me, so please tweet me.
Yes, tweet us all. All right, thanks, guys. See you next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.